Congressman Peter Welch, Democrat of Vermont, the only one at large, as we say. He's been in office since 2007. Well, you know, Peter, I don't know how you get so brilliant, but the more you're there, the smarter you get. And I'm always awed to be in a room with you.
Thank you.
You don't know what to say, do you? Okay, so
I don't.
So anyway, so now Paul Ryan retires. Implications, please, sir.
You know, it's going to be the same. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss. I don't see anything changing. There's going to be a bit of a leadership battle, possibly on the Republican side, between McCarthy and Scalise. But essentially, there's not much change. You know, Ryan was popular within his conference, but when you look at his record, it's pretty dismal, and it's dismal both for what he did. You know, this tax cut is going to live in infamy. It won't really boost the economy, and it's adding over $1 trillion to the deficit, actually $10 trillion over 10 years. And it's ironic because Paul Ryan made his name as a fiscally responsible person or someone committed to fiscal responsibility, yet he will have presided over the largest increase in the debt since the Second World War when we were in peacetime. And then he'll be remembered for the things that we didn't do. I mean, we should have had a vote on DACA. He wouldn't allow it. We should have a vote on preserving net neutrality. He wouldn't allow it. He's refused to bring any kind of gun safety legislation to the House floor. He attempted to repeal Obamacare with a bill that would have taken health care away from 24 million Americans, and he failed on that. And the list goes on. But here's the bottom line. Whoever the new leader is, the current crop of Republicans in Congress are committed to that that same agenda. And I think with a new Congress and a new speaker, if the Republicans were in charge, they would try and fail again. So, you know, Paul Ryan on a personal level is a good person, but on a political level, he should have done things that he didn't even try. In the one, quote, accomplishment, I think is not going to stand up to the test of time, that big tax cut.
But you know, Peter Welch, there's always a downside. I'm a guy who thinks that the glass has never got anything in it. Somebody worse can come along, right?
Well, yes, it's true. I mean, but the point that I'm trying to make here is that if the overall agenda of the Republican conference remains the same, whoever the leader is going to be essentially a captive of that agenda. You know, Paul Ryan is somebody who is in favor of immigration reform, but he didn't even bring up a DACA vote. He's in favor of fiscal responsibility, but he presided over a combination of a tax cut and budget that's going to add $10 trillion to the deficit. So being speaker gives you theoretical power, but if either because you don't have the political skill to guide your conference to sensible policies or the ones you advocate. I mean, he literally didn't even allow us to have a vote on the Dreamers or bring up any bill on immigration reform. And that is a combination of him as speaker, but it's also a reflection of the reality of his conference and how divided it is. And the new leader, whoever it is, good or bad, is going to continue to be presiding over a fractured caucus, with the Freedom Caucus ultimately having veto power. By the way, here's the big issue on the Republican side with my colleagues. If they continue to operate where the only way they'll bring a bill up for a vote is if they can get 218 votes, that's what you need to pass it, from Republicans only, it means that whoever the speaker is, the final say on legislation goes to the most extreme element of the party. That's the Freedom Caucus. And what John Boehner did to his credit on major issues, he would come to the Democrats and we'd get something in exchange, but it would move the bill to a more moderate direction and he would throw the Freedom Caucus overboard. And essentially, we've got to get there. Otherwise, it's a extreme minority, the Freedom Caucus, that gets to call the shots in the House. And Paul Ryan capitulated to that, unfortunately.
So there's another aspect to all of this that I really do want to ask you about, Peter, and that is the business about how can anybody operate with Trump? I mean, he double-crosses everybody. He just did it with Nikki Haley, as we saw. You know, they were going to put sanctions on the Russians, and she went on television, obviously with a talking point supplied by the White House, and then he pulls out the rug from under. Well, he's got to be doing that with his congressional leaders, too, right?
Well, he does it. I mean, just look at how he's for pulling out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership and that he wants to be in it. He's for going after the drug companies, and then he invites all the drug executives into the White House, and they leave smiling. You know, so things change over there from morning to afternoon, let alone from day to day. So I think it is impossible, and that has an enormously adverse consequence. You know, when you're taking on really tough challenges, and this is true in our personal life, it's true in our political life, you have to have thoughtful consideration of where you want to go. And then you have to have a sustained and disciplined effort to get there, because it's usually a hard path from here to there. And you need an attention span of more than 10 minutes or 10 seconds. And what you're seeing in the White House with the president is an absence of any kind of discipline or attention span, no coherent guiding philosophy that anchors him towards an objective. And that means that everyone around him who's trying to essentially implement his, quote, policy is adrift. His policy today will change tomorrow. So you saw that with Nikki Haley speaking what she thought was the White House position, only to have the president pull it out from underneath her. So it really undercuts confidence among the people who are there to help you. But what I've also seen, just in terms of our relationship with allies, is they're mystified as to what the policy is. And that's really bad for America's standing in the world, and really bad for our ability to get things done.
You know, I only have a couple of seconds here, a couple of minutes, but I want to ask you about Governor Scott signed a new gun bill, and I'm wondering, looked like a gutsy move on his part. What are you making of it?
I think it was a tremendously compelling and courageous move by Governor Scott. And, you know, what he said, I know, is true. You know, he's a strong Second Amendment supporter. And even the day after Parkland, he said that we don't need to change our laws in Vermont. But then, of course, we had Fairhaven, where it was only because of the incredibly good work of that chief of police in Fairhaven, the Vermont State Police officer, and the superintendent of schools, that they got on this when they got the first bit of information about this person who wanted as his goal to have the highest body count. And they had eyes on him within a half an hour. And what I think Governor Scott said that I found moving, because I felt it the same way, is learning about that through the affidavit jolted him. And with that sense that we've had in Vermont for so many decades, that these bad things that are happening elsewhere were different in Vermont, that was shattered. You know, there, but for the grace of God, a Parkland event can happen in Vermont. It can happen anywhere. And I think that that's what Governor Scott said motivated him to act. He did. The legislature responded. And now Vermont has done something people thought never could happen. It passed a number of gun safety laws. So I do give Governor Scott significant credit for that.
Well, you know, it is comforting to know that there are people in this country, politicians in this country, who do things because they're right as opposed because they're politically pragmatic on the moment.
Well, you know, we're pretty proud in Vermont that we've got Republicans and Democrats, I think, who are continuing to reach out to one another and to listen to each other's point of view, and also have a capacity to change when circumstances change. You know, I wish we had more of that in Vermont, quite frankly. I wish we had more of what we have in Vermont here in Washington.
We are so proud to have Peter Welch with us. Also proud that Vermont is in our listening area, or a good part of it, and is setting the way for so many of us. Thank you so much, Peter. When we come back the next time,
thank you.
Let's talk about impeachment.
Okay.